Welcome to the second series of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women. My name is Vanessa Vallely, CEO and founder of We Are The City. In series two, we'll be bringing you more of the same. Great tech topics, emerging tech, what's going on post-COVID, from some of the industry's most fantastic speakers.
We want to be encouraging people to check in on each other and send, I don't know, moon cards, e-moon cards and emojis and stuff to kind of boost morale. So I think that's what I'd love to see from employers, really leading the way.
Today we hear from Seyi Akawuwu and Sam Smethers. Seyi is the founder and executive director of Glitch, a growing UK charity championing digital citizenship and ending online abuse. Sam is the former chief executive of the Fawcett Society, the UK's leading membership charity campaigning for gender equality and women's rights. During this podcast, they'll be discussing the deficit in digital citizenship education and its impact on women in the workplace, plus their key recommendations for a more equal and positive online world.
Welcome to our conversation with me, Sam Smethers, Chief Executive of the Fawcett Society, and Seyi Akawuwu, who is the Chief Executive of Glitch. And I'm going to let Seyi introduce herself and tell you all about what Glitch does.
As Sam said, I'm Seyi. I'm the founder and CEO of Glitch. Glitch is a UK charity dedicated to making the online space safe for all by championing digital citizenship and ending online abuse. Super excited to be having this conversation around the opportunities for tech and employers to make sure that COVID and its impact on women doesn't have to be as bad as it is and what we're seeing. So looking forward to this chat with you, Sam.
Lovely. And just to tell you a little bit more about Fawcett, we're a sex equality campaigning charity. Been going for many years, but one of the things that we focus on is inequality in the workplace. So this issue of violence and harassment against women and how it happens in the workplace in all its forms, whether it be online or offline, is something that really is of main concern to us and has been for some time. And so what we're going to do is have a bit of a Q&A conversation, and then hopefully that will be useful to you and you'll find it informative and come and find out a bit more about what we do after this session. So Seyi, I'm just going to put a straightforward question to you, really. Thinking about this crisis, and obviously you've got many years' experience already in this area, but what have you seen that's changed? What have you seen that's different, really, in the last 3 months in terms of online harm and abuse?
Yeah, I think before COVID and the lockdown and the increase in internet usage, we were already seeing that women were disproportionately affected by online abuse and harms and harassment. And we saw with an intersectional lens that disproportionately impacted women of colour, disabled communities and non-binary people. There was already a huge concern, and you know that through Fawcett's work with Reclaim the Internet a few years ago, calling for an end of this extension of offline harassment now entering our kind of online space and becoming a new form of violence against women. But what we're particularly seeing with COVID is the fact that kitchen tables, living rooms, gardens have become people's workplaces. And that has been an extension of a place where they could leave at 5 or leave at 6 o'clock. It was a place where there was a kind of separation of church and state. And actually what we've seen is that a place which is meant to be a sanctity and a home and a safe space is now increasingly becoming the workplace. And with that means the exposure to sexual harassment, abuse from colleagues, from people on the phone. We've seen a lot of companies move to kind of chat boxes and using WhatsApp as a way of kind of being able to communicate to their customers quite quickly. And that's become quite abusive as well. And we've also seen new forms of online abuse that we had never really heard before. So Zoom bombing is a really new term. And sadly, over the weekend, we saw a couple of trainings being held by organizations be bombed by far-right extremists, Islamophobic people, homophobic people. And so what is meant to be a safe space, particularly for marginalized communities online, is increasingly now being exposed to new forms of online abuse and tactics. I think what this also exposes is the need for better privacy policies, security policies, and in making sure we're involving women in the development of new products. Just going off a little bit of a tangent, we also saw last week that Twitter rolled out a new product where you could send voice notes on Twitter only for iPhone users. I'm a Samsung user, so I haven't got it yet. Shout out to anyone who's Team Samsung. But what we saw there was a complete disregard for how disabled users, particularly deaf communities, were going to be able to use that new product and how they'd be isolated and how marginalized communities are not at the forefront or center of these new products, and yet they benefit from us using it. So I think COVID has really amplified already existing inequalities that we're seeing in tech. There are already, I think it's not a good enough number of women and civil society groups being involved in these new products and platforms. And also the role that employers must play in making sure they're keeping their employees safe in terms of health and safety, in terms of sexual harassment, and in terms of any new forms of tech abuse.
And that's a really important question, isn't it? Because the first week or so of this in lockdown, you know, shifting all your operations, everyone going work from home, focused on all those sort of practical things, you know, is it working? Is the tech working? All that kind of stuff. I suspect people just weren't thinking about at all that this could mean that there was going to be more online harm of their staff, you know, that thought had not entered people's minds. And obviously you were alive to it, Shay, because you warned everybody else. But I just wondered, from an employer's perspective, and that this sort of online working is going to become the norm for many more of us, let's be honest, we're not going to go back to the way we were working before. Some of us will, but most of us probably won't. So what does that really mean, and in terms of what an employer needs to do differently and think differently about the way they protect their staff and what they put in place?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, campaigners have been pushing for remote working, disability campaigners, women pushing for flexi leave, and it took a pandemic to get that. And so that's been the forefront. And obviously the economy as well, wanting to make sure that it can be business as usual, banks can still serve its customers, et cetera. So I totally get the order of priority. But now we're in a swing of things in terms of getting the tech right, knowing how to make sure you mute and unmute yourself in Zoom calls and stuff like that. Now we've got that kind of rhythm of things. It's an opportunity to not sit back, but continue that kind of energy to want to make sure that this is a smooth transition. We need to take that energy to now look at safety and now look at potential weaknesses in security. So not just cyber fraud, not just misinformation, but really looking at what code of conducts need to be applied in your organization, rather than just assuming that everyone's going to be like you, a good employee, respectful, really thinking about policies that make sure that it's really clear what the behavior and expectations are of everybody. So do you expect your direct reports to be having catch-ups with you in bed and inappropriately dressed? What are the expectations or the behaviors you have around inappropriate messaging and inappropriate requests of nude photos from employees, which we've also heard through the grapevine via thing? What are the support systems you're putting in place in terms of digital self-care and well-being if you are working at airline company, for example, and you're having to you're receiving very heated and frustrating messages and phone calls and text messages from people worried about their refunds or their travel vouchers? What, as an employer, are you doing to make sure that their self-care is at the forefront? And looking at kind of the well-being work that has been done by employees over the last few years around mental health being seen as really important part of an employer's responsibility, seeing that also include the digital self-care bit, it being okay for not everyone to have to put their videos on, encouraging people to go for a walk while they're on a phone call, encouraging more breaks, they're not consistently looking at the screen. I don't know about you, Sam, but I definitely think my eyesight has gotten a lot worse over the last 3 months because I'm on the on the screen a lot. So I think there needs to be a holistic thinking about digital self-care from a prevention and a risk reduction, but also kind of the behaviors we want to see. We want to be encouraging people to check in on each other and send, I don't know, moon cards, e-moon cards and emojis and stuff to kind of boost morale. So I think that's what I'd love to see from employers, really leading the way. And we've seen that a little bit with Black Lives Matter becoming so mainstream, resources and conversations around how employers should be more respectful and sensitive to their Black employees during this time. I know I sent that resource to my board around how they can support me being a CEO and founder. So we're already seeing those kind of nuanced conversations around duty of care in employers. And I'd like to start seeing that more with COVID-19.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Because the other thing we've seen, certainly through Fawcett's survey work that we've been doing in response to the pandemic, is just, you know, how significantly mental health is being adversely impacted right now anyway, you know, across the whole population. And then you've got these other big events which are having particular impacts on certain groups of population. And so certainly for, you know, Black members of staff right now, in the wake of George Floyd's murder and everything else that's happened, it's been a massive event. And, you know, and as employers, we all absolutely need to respond to that and think about how we do things differently. And I just wondered whether even the phrase digital self-care is an interesting one. I don't even know if people watching this will be familiar with it, and just generally kind of what it means, and giving people permission to actively think about their own digital self-care, and it almost more than permission, like you've got the responsibility of taking care of yourself digitally as well as you would do in terms of walking down the street or anything else. So, but what as employers, we, and I say we because I am an employer, what we can do to support our staff's digital self-care. So what are the sort of practical things you think we should be doing?
Yeah, good question. So I think digital self-care was a term that I came up with just last year or the year before, because I just felt like that was missing from the digital citizenship, online abuse, harassment conversations, that we were waiting for the most kind of violent acts to happen before thinking about the kind of more low level kind of infringes on your boundaries and your well-being. And self-care for us is very much setting boundaries around your needs and around your kind of limit and applying that on the online space. So I know, Sam, you're really good at Christmas and the holidays and half time. I've noticed that, of saying, I'm off for a week, you know, anything around Fawcett, here's their handle, I'm out, kind of. And that's really, really good digital self-care, I think. And it's really good that as a leader as well, where you probably feel like you have to always be on and responding and there's always something kicking off that you want to kind of be involved in. Actually, the best thing to do is take those breaks, because you can come back stronger and come back being able to lead your team and be a leader in the sector. So I think understanding the first step is to kind of, as an individual, reflecting on what our needs and boundaries are. Do you need to discipline yourself and not jump on Twitter before you even brush your teeth in the morning? I know that is me. Do you need to think about using platforms settings better and getting more familiar with them? So on Twitter, you can create lists, and that way you can kind of manipulate the timeline that you want to see. So you can create a list and add accounts that maybe are around self-care or around activism or around dogs or puppies, and that way that becomes your timeline for a bit, rather than kind of the mishmash of all the people you follow and all their retweets, which can sometimes be quite graphic or kind of be inappropriate or just not the kind of headspace you're in. Also looking at kind of muting and filtering, but these are options and opportunities on social media platforms. I would love to kind of see that conversation be happening with the platforms that we use for work. So like Slack and Zoom and Microsoft Teams and Google Hangouts, how those kind of privacy filtering, muting, capturing inappropriate words and content that you don't want to see, how that can also be extended to kind of work platforms that we use. And then the third tip is around implementing those and communicating it. This is probably a bit political, but I think it's something we can definitely learn from. Vicky Ford, an MP for Chelmsford, she has a rules of engagement policy on her Facebook page, and she outlines all the things that she will not tolerate on her Facebook page as an MP. And you can still contact her for casework, but through the kind of more formal mechanisms of calling the office or writing a letter or an email. But she won't tolerate abuse. She won't tolerate harassment. She won't tolerate all of those things. And outlining it really clearly, I think, is really good for people to kind of communicate, for us to communicate how we want people to work with us and interact with us. I don't know about you, but I often get people DMing me about really traumatic, sad cases that of what they've experienced in terms of online abuse and harassment. And you could be like watching EastEnders, or I'm watching or stalking Idris. And then all of a sudden you're reading this kind of really traumatic content and actually thinking about communicating and saying, sorry, my DMs are not for work, but here's where you can contact me, and putting those kind of rules in. I would love to also see technology assist that. So a technology assist kind of trigger warning, sensitive material warnings that we can be putting on things that we upload on social media, where there are options for employees to set Slack channels or Microsoft Teams and any other of those mechanisms, an option to be able to say, look, we ban these words, like we don't think it's appropriate for the N word to be used or the C word to be used. And so anytime that's being used, it's flagged or it doesn't allow it to be posted. And obviously we need to bear all of this in mind in terms of like censorship and surveillance. But I think technology has an opportunity here to ease our digital self-care and make that more of a prominent thing, rather than being bombarded by content all the time and feeling overwhelmed, particularly when we've had lockdown measures that don't allow us to physically escape social media. How technology can assist us being able to make those boundaries and communicate them.
Yeah, I think you've spoken really powerfully then. Thinking about both the powers we as individuals have, actually we can proactively set some boundaries. We're not powerless in this situation. And sometimes I think partly when you're a little bit tech phobic anyway, and then also you're sort of on a platform, you think, oh, it's all just sort of happening to you. And actually you can take some control and you can put some boundaries in place. I think that's a really, really important, powerful message. And then the point about what tech platforms can do and what more they can do to actually support and assist that and take some ownership of that themselves. Really, really important, because it's all been with the philosophy of just kind of, we're creating this and our users will use it and use it in a beautiful way. And actually, no, they won't. You know, some of them really won't use it in a beautiful way. It's a very ugly way. And that takes us actually to the kind of online harms and abuse regulation issue, and also misogyny, hate crime, which are two things that Fawcett's sort of actively involved in lobbying on at the moment. Because obviously hate crime and misogyny doesn't just happen face-to-face in physical spaces, it happens very much in online spaces too, and those two interact. Your offline can very much be driven by the online and vice versa. And we've got the opportunity to improve the way platforms are regulated through online harms regulation. But at the moment, it's not clear yet how strongly that is going to be protecting women and protecting all them from all the different forms of abuse that they experience online. And that's something I know that we've both been very kind of concerned about and engaged with. And a priority in the next few months as that legislation goes forward. So in terms of the sort of final messages, is thinking about the role you play as an employer, both in terms of your staff, but also in terms of whether it be your customer base, people you interact with, anyone you interact with. And I say this thinking about it from a Fawcett perspective, where we run Zoom events, as you know, we've been doing a series of them and some of them have been really successful. But we very quickly realised we had to put some measures in place both to protect our staff, our speakers, our attendees, because of that risk of Zoom bombing, as you talked about, where people will kind of come in late into the event and hijack it and start posting really offensive stuff in chats and so on. So you have to be really alive to that. So we've put a whole series of sort of guidelines in place. And yeah, we've been learning as we go, I have to say. We've had to quite quickly get on top of, but you know, we've taken that quite seriously because we don't want our events to be used as a tool, a vehicle to post abusive or hateful content. And that's really, really important. So I think whatever you're doing, whether it's an online space or an offline space, you have to take that responsibility of how do you want this experience to be for your staff, for your users, for whoever it might be who's interacting with you. And I think, you know, we all have to take that responsibility, even if we can't control what other people outside are going to do, but we can in their tracks if we manage it properly and carefully.
I liked what you said about learning as we go. I definitely feel it as like a new employer in the charity sector of like waiting for things to be perfect before like launching it. And actually, I think what you said about learning as you go, we're all learning. This is all new territory. Everybody, COVID, lockdown, use of the internet, etc. And I think just being really open about we're going to trial this as an employer and being okay for feedback, or building the capacity of existing well-being champions in your company if you have those, or start one of those. That's just the way to start. Don't kind of wait for perfection and think about all the risk, and then it kind of paralyzes you and where you don't act. I think being okay to make mistakes and learn as you go is the most freeing thing you can do when trying to explore digital self-care and digital citizenship.
Absolutely. And I think with all of this, it has to be done in that way, because you know, literally we'd have done nothing if we'd have just sort of sat and waited to be told what it is. And we just had to kind of crack on and do it because everything was moving so quickly. I think the other point you've made about mental well-being is really, really important. And certainly we've elevated that internally. So we've absolutely got to prioritise that as a top priority for staff right now and see the things being very much connected. So if you focus on well-being of your staff, then obviously you have to think about how they're experiencing the online space, because their whole working life is currently basically online, except when they turn it off and maybe read a paper or something. It's all happening in that space. The two are so fundamentally connected that we can't divorce them now. And I think that's been a shift. It was kind of heading in that direction anyway, if we're honest. It's really, you know, gone up a gear and shifted. So I just think if we really play everything through the prism of online, and that is our working lives, then how we experience the online space has to be a top priority. And therefore, given we know mental well-being is really suffering, all the evidence tells us that everybody's mental well-being is suffering, some groups more than others. Mothers of young children, Black and white ethnic women, disabled women, all these groups you're talking about, absolutely at the sharp end in terms of how they're experiencing this crisis right now. So we've got to put that front and centre as well. And if we do those things, then actually we've got a good chance of supporting our staff and coming through the other side as a strong team still.
I agree. I have one final question for you. What would be your one like technological thing you'd love that would make well-being easier for you as an employer?
Gosh, what would be the one thing I would love? I was going to give you an answer, which isn't as an employer, it's as a mum with kids at home. I just want someone else to do the homeschooling and to do it really well, and you just crack the button. and then to be really happy and engaged.
Yeah.
That all just seamlessly happened, but it's not happening, people.
I mean, even we haven't got the time to go into it, but homeschooling is another one about thinking about all the safeguard concerns around that. But then just the practicality of it, if all your children are being homeschooled and using the internet and using video conferencing calls, and then you're also working and you say you've got a partner as well, your broadband and your internet just will cut out. And so there's a practical infrastructure issue as well around homeschooling and working from home too. Thank you so much, Sam, for having this conversation with me.
Oh, thank you for all the work you do. I really learned a lot from you, Shay, in all the work you do. It's really fantastic. So do look at the Itches website. Do download the resources. Really fantastic. Get Shay into your organisation to do some training. She's brilliant. Shameless pitch. You know, just go and do some consultancy with Shay. You won't regret it.
I really appreciate that. In terms of a shameless pitch as well, we have a COVID-19 survey that is out. Oh. And the preliminary results prove everything that Sam and I were saying. So we will share the link out on social media, but really encourage you all as employers to share with your employees, to talk about an opportunity for them to share how they've experienced COVID-19, if they face online abuse, face an increase in online abuse, and what kind of training and support they would like. So that's my shameless plug. Please do complete the survey.
Great. And we'll be promoting that survey too and continue to work closely with Shay in the coming months, both to tackle online abuse in the workplace, but also actually in terms of supporting women to become candidates. We've got another Equal Power program running, which I'm literally involved in. So I'll make a pitch to you as well. If you're interested in standing for election, if you want to find out more about politics, go to our website and sign up for the Equal Power program. We need more women in that space, and we certainly need more women of all walks of life, including the tech sector. So please do go online, have a look.
Saye and Sam, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. If you want to find out more about either Sam or Saye's incredible work, you can find them on Twitter. And a huge thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget, we release a new episode every single Wednesday of She Talks Tech. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, don't forget to leave us that all-important 5-star rating.